I'm in a good mood today. I'm in a very affable mood. I'm in a mood, Mr. Speaker, for talking. Mr. Speaker, I've sat in this honorable chamber over the last two full days, listening to the angry, salivating mouths of the opposition, both within and without this house, spewing nothing but hopelessness, spewing nothing but pessimism, nothing but frustration and exasperation. Assuming, Mr. Speaker, a debilitating posture that can be described as the unadulterated quintessence of nihilism. I'm learning from the member for Labrie, Mr. Speaker. But why? Why, Mr. Speaker? The answer is simple. It's an agenda. It's an agenda to destroy our Prime Minister. It's an agenda to destroy the good work and the good men and women of the St. Lucia Labour Party. It is an agenda to destroy St. Lucia itself, Mr. Speaker. And yes, Mr. Speaker, in recent times, it has become so easy to catch the emotional virus of negativity, spreading all over this country. It has become endemic, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, it has become pandemic among their ranks, the ranks of the four oppositions. It's not a united opposition, Mr. Speaker. There are four oppositions, quote unquote. But the work that this Labour Party administration has executed over the last 8 years, propelled by pragmatic, functional, and visionary budgets, not exclusive of this one for 2005-2006, Mr. Speaker, which are profound statements on the present and the future, provide the healing antidote to the dysfunctionalities, the incompetence, the morbid myopism of a past administration which at this time is endeavoring to resurrect itself in octogenarian appeal. But Mr. Speaker, as John 14:27 suggests, let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid, because all of the people of St. Lucia can bring their crosses to labor. Mr. Speaker, this budget of the Minister of Finance, the member for Beaufort South, suggested that we are looking to create a world-class destination. And that's important, Mr. Speaker. That is so very important for us. Government, Mr. Speaker, I have heard the opposition saying so many things, and all it was, Mr. Speaker, was a libewa of incoherence. No justification for what has been said. And you hear the leader of the opposition. I don't know who is leader of the opposition now, Mr. Speaker, because one person wants the Prime Minister's job, the other one wants to call the public. Oh, she wants to sit in the Prime Minister's chair. Thanks for the correction. Member for Grosley, through you, Mr. Speaker. Some have said that government has lost its way. Some are in perpetual reflection. Beware of that, you know. Because reflection and by extension reverie is a dangerous thing, because you could never get action if you remain in perpetual reverie. That is the point, Mr. Speaker. But government, Mr. Speaker, despite all what they have said about this, debt business and all, I don't need to go into that again because they will be dealt with at the appointed time and place. Government has made, Mr. Speaker, deliberate attempt to revitalize this economy through what can be referred to in the research literature as the counter-cyclical fiscal policy. Simple economics, Mr. Speaker. All it suggests is that government has taken the lead role an investment in the economy during a period of economic downturn. That's what they refuse to understand, Mr. Speaker. And this policy has borne more fruit. More fruit, as we have witnessed this year, with the 3.6% real GDP growth in 2004. What more do you want? And Mr. Speaker, last year, if you recall, when I made my contribution in this Honorable House, I alluded to the fact that the budget for 2004-2005 sought to ignite growth. It sought to ignite growth through expansionary fiscal policy. I said that last year, Mr. Speaker. And that, Mr. Speaker, has been achieved. It has been achieved because in this 2005-2006 budget, the government of St. Lucia has done what it said it would do. It has aimed for sustained economic growth. We, Mr. Speaker, are therefore continuing investment in infrastructure in an effort to provide an appropriate economic environment for private sector partnership and investment. Simple economics, Mr. Speaker. No fanfare, no trouble. And one of the initiatives we have seen is the reduction in corporate taxes now being reduced to 30%. A reduction in corporate tax, Mr. Speaker, is an economic tool which does the following. One, it enables the private sector to save more of its income. Two, it provides a pool of financial resources at commercial banks which can assist in further investment. Three, it can also facilitate a further lowering of the interest rates given the liquidity in the commercial banking sector. That is what the oppositions, that is what the members of the oppositions refuse to understand. And Mr. Speaker, it is well established in the economic literature that foreign direct investment gravitates to areas of stable macroeconomic environment and a sound incentive framework. This budget, Mr. Speaker, therefore presents a comprehensive package of incentives that both the local, private sector and foreign investors can respond to. I heard one of them suggest, the member for Denver North suggest that we must do away something tantamount to the fact that we must do away with investors and we must not give them as much as those in the region and so on, referring to the taxi sector and other sectors which he said should be reserved for locals. Let's see how that works. In fact, Mr. Speaker, when I look at it, most sectors or most segments of the economy can benefit from the generous package of incentives, the private sector, the tourism sector, and the agricultural sector. So this government is therefore using a tool of fiscal incentives to broaden the policy space and maintain the productive dynamism within the economy. That's what it's doing. Why the use of fiscal incentives? I heard criticisms from the honorable member of Miku North. I wish you were there. I know he's well steeped in authors such as George Beckford and Trevor Munro. Why the use of fiscal incentives? Because, Mr. Speaker, it's simple. We have a narrow policy space due to a lack of control over monetary policy, as St. Lucia, of course, as you know, is a member of the Eastern Caribbean currency. And it stands to reason, therefore, Mr. Speaker, that we must take advantage of every window of opportunity that avails itself. I do not want to say any more about this, Mr. Speaker, because I think it has been well explained by all the members on this side of the House, and I'm sure further, it will be explained further by the Minister for Finance. I just want to make one small point, Mr. Speaker, that the creation of the Agricultural Diversification Agency is a stroke of genius. It's a stroke of genius for the further diversification of the economy, and it's an initiative that should be supported. If the industry is further diversified, Mr. Speaker, the following will be achieved. One, the backward and forward linkages will be created. The development of the agro-processing sector, so well suggested, of course, by the member for Denry North. the opportunity for the creation of employment. The social benefits of St. Lucia's consuming what they grow, as eloquently suggested by the member for Castries North. And the reduction in foreign exchange leakage as a result of greater consumption of local products. Don't worry about that. But Mr. Speaker, before I get on to the Ministry of Health, I want to speak to what the Honourable Member for Castries Central suggested yesterday in this Honourable Chamber. The Honourable Member for Castries Central raised, Mr. Speaker, a number of issues to which I shall now respond directly. She asked about the Golden Fund, about what is happening at Golden Hope, and she indicated, Mr. Speaker, that Victoria Hospital is worse than ever and that service in the A&E has deteriorated from 45 minutes. The beauty salon is related to the Golden Fund. I know what I'm talking about. So I shall respond to those questions, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to let the Honourable Member for Castries Central understand that we have some very hard workers in this ministry. And that when certain things are suggested in this Honourable Chamber, what you are doing is actually questioning the work of those people who are working so hard in this ministry, Mr. Speaker. But let us go into a bit of history. By December 2000, the then Minister for Health, the Honourable Member for Castries Central, tabled the health sector reform proposals to Cabinet, to the Cabinet of Ministers, and got the health sector reform policy approved by Cabinet. The Minister then forgot to implement these proposals in the systematic manner in which they were supposed to be effected. She seems, Mr. Speaker, to be suffering a bout of convenient amnesia. She seems like she accused us to have lost her way. She seems to have removed herself from the people who had helped her design the reforms and rather charted her own course, which was in contrast to the systematic reforms proposed. So, these were to be complemented with short-term success activities to give the reform momentum. Rather, Mr. Speaker, the Minister adopted a political cherry-picking, piecemeal, an ad hoc approach designed not to reform the health sector meaningfully, but to gain political kudos for the cherries that she was picking. In reform, Mr. Speaker, there are some hard choices and decisions that have to be made. The hard choices and decisions that I have had to make now, Mr. Speaker, in the Ministry of Health. So the Member for Central Castries, the Member for Castries Central, ran away from the decisions and skimmed the cream. This, Mr. Speaker, is not an effective or sustainable way to create meaningful and real change. That is not a sustainable way, Mr. Speaker. And the Member for Central Castries, by her own words, saw the failure of her approach. The A&E, Mr. Speaker, is an example of this. The upgrade of the A&E was one of the quick successes designed to give momentum and confidence to the overall health sector reform processes.
On a point of order, Mr. Speaker, I would like to clarify what I said yesterday, and if the minister looks at the health sector reform document, because he's contradicting himself. If he looks at the health sector reform document, which was prepared during my tenure as the minister, he will see that refurbishing the A&E department was part of the shorter measures within the overall health sector development. So it is not accurate for him to say that I went on a political journey of my own, or whatever words he used. It was part and parcel of the health sector reform. It was one of the short-term measures, and that is what he has destroyed. He's supposed to build on it. He's destroyed it. That's my point. It's in here. Part of the proposal.
Minister for Health, can you answer this before I decide?
Mr. Speaker, the honourable member has had a long, long history of disruption, but I shall continue. Mr. Speaker!
You must answer my question. She stated a question. Could you answer her that it does not relate to what you're saying?
Mr. Speaker, but I said it in my... Let me cool out. Mr. Speaker, I said in this that it was part of the health sector reform. But if I continue this, she will see where I'm going to, Mr. Speaker. I agree it was part of health sector reform.
No.
I agree it was one of the short-term measures.
On a point of order, he said that I went outside the proposals and went on a political journey of my own to pick and choose what I wanted to implement. And he referred to the ANE as one of them. Now he's admitting that it is indeed part of the short term. So he should withdraw what he said earlier because it's a misrepresentation, which by the what he said, he has contradicted himself. So he should acknowledge that. Build on the foundation I laid at the ministry.
Honourable Member for Central Castries, the test I have to apply is this, whether it involves an interpretation of the rules, directions and various provisions of the standing orders which regulate the business of the House, and whether it raises a point which I can decide. The answer to this is no, I cannot decide on that. Please proceed, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said, when I was interrupted, the ANE is an example of this. The upgrade of the ANE was one of the quick successes designed to give momentum and confidence to the overall health sector reform process. A specialist emergency room physician, Dr. Lisa Charles of St. Lucian, in whom we are proud, was contracted to head the ANE department. Staff structure and physical infrastructure were improved, and yet the ANE service improved as we expected. But the honourable member did not allow me to continue, you see. The honourable member for Castries Central then forgot ANE and moved on to other creaming projects. The result again was as expected. Was as expected. The changes in ANE did not stand on their own, Mr. Speaker. It could not stand. They could not stand on their own. They had to be concomitant changes. They had to be attendant changes in the health financial system. They had to be a national emergency medical services. They had to be hospital managed systems.
Speaker,
and the community health services.
I'm afraid I have to object on a point of order again. Because the honourable member is misleading the House. The A&E department hit at that level of performance after I left the ministry. It's when Dr. Lisa Charles's contract was refused that it started to go down under his watch. I must, for the benefit of St. Lucia, clarify that. Because he is misleading the House. And the doctors and the nurses at the A&E department will tell you that. I left that ministry in December 2001. And this thing was working smoothly until they refused Mr. Speaker, to renew her contract. That's when it started going down.
Honourable Member, you have not raised a point of order. You have made a short speech. Honourable Minister for Health. No, Honourable, you have not raised the point of order. Minister of Health, please continue.
Mr. Speaker, I'm accustomed to disruption. It will not prevent me from losing my train of thought. And Mr. Speaker, there were even more changes, as I said, such as the ANE consultant that should also have been done within the ANE. But as indicated, the member for Castries Central had forgotten. The result of her forgetfulness, Mr. Speaker, was the increase in frustration in ANE. Dr. Charles left and went to the UK, where she functioned as an emergency room consultant in the National Health Service. This is the caliber of people, though, Mr. Speaker, that I want in the health service. This is the caliber of people. To that end, Mr. Speaker, I have now, before cabinet approval, the hiring of an accident and emergency physician who is now in country to head the A&E. In addition, I have also identified and have for cabinet's approval the second A&E consultant. Further to this, I have requested, Mr. Speaker, that this very accident and emergency physician, prior to taking up the head or leading the A&E department on August 1st, 2005, conduct a three-month assessment to advise me on all that I need to put in place to ensure an immediate improvement to the A&E services at VH.
This time I am going to refer to the ordered number that I wish to invoke, which is Order 34B, where it says a member may interrupt to require another member to elucidate some matter raised by that member in the course of his speech. And of course it says only if the member is willing to yield or give way.
No, the member
was not. So, Mr. Speaker, I am hoping, I am now going to ask a question that I would like the minister to elucidate on what he's raised. I am hoping that he yields. I would like the minister to inform the House on what day did Dr. Lisa Charles' consultant end her contract at the A&E department. Secondly, I would also like the minister to furnish the Honorable House with information as to whether or not during my tenure as minister there was not already a post approved of the second consultant in A&E, which is now trying to fill. May I again go over what the information I'm requesting? On what date did Dr. Lisa Charles end her contract at the A&E department? One. And two, whether or not during my tenure as Minister of Health, the second post of A&E consultant that he's referring to, which he's now seeking to fill, was already established in the structure of the Ministry of Health for the A&E department. Thank you.
Honourable Member, are you willing to yield or give way?
No.
Honourable Member for Central Castries, I must remind you that a point of order cannot be raised. For example, a member should not seek to have a clarification from a minister in the garb of a point of order. You raise the point of order, but what in fact you are seeking is our dates when doctors resigned, etc.
It is apparently because earlier he suggested that it was out of frustration because of my policies as the Minister of Health that Dr. Charles left. So it is important that he states that date she left, because she left under his tenure. It is important, Mr. Speaker. It is important because he is alleging things that are not true. And he should be in a position to provide this information so that the honorable members and the people who are listening will believe what he's saying. Because the records will show differently.
Honorable Member, Honorable Minister of Health, can you provide the date on which the doctor left?
Mr. Speaker, I will proceed with my submission on the 2005-2006 appropriation bill.
You will not yield.
Mr. Speaker, you know, anyway, with all the major stakeholders in the emergency services, Mr. Speaker, this National Emergency Medical Service, what I want to suggest is that I will be contracting this individual, as I said, to look directly at the National Emergency Medical Services. With all the major stakeholders in the emergency services, this National Emergency Medical Service will create a superior ambulance and pre-hospital emergency service, as well as a more effective disaster response and better mass event emergency services. Mr. Speaker, all I am trying to suggest is that things have to be approached systematically and comprehensively. And honorable members, if we intend to be effective, we have to approach things systematically and comprehensively, not creaming this and creaming that. It was the member for Castries Central that said that we're taking loans and we're flying it there, we're putting it there, we're stacking up there, we're patching up there. And this is exactly what she did during her tenure. Mr. Speaker, it is clear that this was not the approach that we have to take. Things must be done systematically and comprehensively. But Mr. Speaker, that is not enough. And that is why I have now poised this country to implement the real and systematic reforms in the health sector. In the health financial sector, for example, witness UHC. The hospital governance and management, witness statutorization. The hospital services, witness accreditation, the accreditation process through the Canadian Council on Health Services Accreditation, CCHSA. What more do you want? Let me now turn to the Golden Fund. Mr. Speaker, this Golden Fund was a creation of the member of the Castries Central, an admirable creation. Admirable creation, Mr. Speaker. It was administered and managed by her, and when she left the ministry, so did the fund. I need to conduct, Mr. Speaker, an inquiry into how much money was raised from the public for this fund. How was this fund managed? Who were the beneficiaries? Who were the trustees? What is the account number? And where are the files? Where are the files?
Mr. Speaker,
I thank the member.
Mr. Speaker, I am raising a point of order. Again. And again, I'm raising this point of order under order 35-5. I know the minister hasn't finished his sentence yet, but I'm raising it, Mr. Speaker, because order 5 says no member shall impute improper motives to any other member of either chamber of parliament. It seems where he's heading, will offend that rule. I'm raising it now as a caution.
I also want to find out, Mr. Speaker, who are the main contractors? But I thank the member of Castries Central, Mr. Speaker, for raising this issue and reminding me as minister and this honorable house that even after we leave our office, we must be accountable for what we do. That is the point, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker,
I trust that nothing unsavory.
Mr. Speaker, can I offer the minister the information that he wants to inquire about? Very simply, Mr. Speaker, may I have that opportunity? The information that he wants to seek.
No, honorable member.
Now in this house.
When one raises.
Because the minister is suggesting that the funds went elsewhere. Let me tell him. Every single cent of the funds was deposited in the Ministry of Finance. So if he wants any answer, ask his Minister of Finance. It was managed by the Ministry of Finance, and not one penny was spent under any authority of the minister. The Ministry of Finance managed the money, and he should seek the advice from his Minister of Finance.
When one raises a point of order, no debate is allowed. And there is no imputation as to character yet. And I hope the Honorable Minister of Health does not transgress that particular rule, namely 34-5. Please proceed, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is no doubt that Golden Hope Hospital is in dire need of basic equipment and furniture, as in desperate need of a complete change of building. These conditions cannot be allowed to continue, Mr. Speaker, I agree. But for us to be discussing a beauty clinic at Golden Hope with a desperate situation there, Mr. Speaker, is nothing short of ludicrous. Nothing short of ludicrous. Again, Mr. Speaker, the member for Castries Central lost sight of the truly important and necessary mental health reforms, including human resource development of our mental health workers, the replacement of Goldnobel for modern mental health facilities, the community mental health services, comprehensive occupational therapy, not cosmetic smoke screens masquerading as occupational therapy. Imagine, Mr. Speaker, while the member was embarking on a beauty clinic for members of the general public to have their hair done and manicures performed, patients were sleeping on the floor and on mattresses with bed bugs. The kitchen was using a stove pesticide as an ancient Bunsen burner rather than a stove. And the staff and patients had to wash clothes and linen by hand. This is what I found there, Mr. Speaker. There was no washing machine. This year, we have the help of friends. Installed a new stove. We have installed a new washing machine, and we have replaced all of the mattresses. But Mr. Speaker,
what happened to hairdressers salon?
Yes, we closed the beauty clinic, and I make no apologies for it, Mr. Speaker. And you know when we closed the beauty clinic? We closed the beauty clinic on April 21st, 2005. Why? Why? Because there have been virtually no clients for the client for the entire year. It appears, Mr. Speaker, that the member for Castries Central, who indicated she would use the beauty clinic, has found other places to go.
Mr. Speaker, on a point of order, it seems that I will have to be on my feet. I would like the minister to verify the fact that he says that there have been no clients, because the clients are the patients at the hospital, and as far as I know, the staff at the clinic go on the walls to conduct their services, and also the clients come in. How can there be no clients when the clients are the patients and the patients live at the hospital? He doesn't know what is happening at the hospital.
Honourable Member, Honourable Minister of Health, would you not agree that a beauty clinic is part of the therapy for patients?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it's very much part of the therapy. But may I continue, sir? Mr. Speaker, the member for Castries Central is forgetful. So perhaps she forgot her way to the clinic. Or maybe she forgot she said she would be using it. But Mr. Speaker, the ministry pays two staff members to man the clinic, which is not doing anything. We have redeployed these staff to the ward, where they can help care for the patients and do the necessary, including grooming and maintaining the physical appearance and hygiene of the patient. Mr. Speaker, I think I have addressed the issues raised by the Honourable Member for Castries Central. The people of Castries Central may want to beware of the convenient amnesia. But Mr. Speaker, more on that a little later, at the appointed time. But Mr. Speaker, the reform process in the Ministry of Health is designed to meet the challenges of the new millennium. The potential scourge, Mr. Speaker, of communicable diseases has emphasized the need to mobilize human and financial resources for effective surveillance of newly emerging diseases like SARS, like HIV/AIDS. Re-emerging diseases like typhoid and cholera, and endemic diseases like tuberculosis, leptospirosis, and dengue. Non-communicable diseases, diabetes, hypertension, and cancer are often referred to as our silent killers. Our health profile, Mr. Speaker, clearly indicates that these diseases are leading causes of death and morbidity. Injuries from intentional and non-intentional violence are leading causes of death and disability, affecting especially our young people. Mental illness, Mr. Speaker, results in a significant burden of disease and affects all: depression, anxiety, behavioral disorders, and psychoses are prevalent in our society. There is therefore an urgent need to ensure that there are adequate trained professionals and affordable, effective interventions. And the ability, Mr. Speaker, to respond effectively to these health challenges demands multi-sectoral, coordinated national programs. You see, Mr. Speaker, you cannot have a world-class destination if you do not have a world-class health system to feed that world-class destination. That's important, Mr. Speaker. And we are moving, and we want to move towards that. Underlying disease, Mr. Speaker, there are problems of environmental health and the socio-economic environment. Further, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Health is cognizant of the fact that good health is one of the main prerequisites for sustained social and economic development. I do not even want to go into the poverty survey, Mr. Speaker, of 1995. I think all of us in this honorable house should be familiar with this. But suffice it to say, Mr. Speaker, that in 1995, the poverty gap for the entire country was 8.6%, which represents the average consumption needed to be transferred to the poor to bring them just above the poverty line. In my past presentations, Mr. Speaker, I have demonstrated the link between health and development. If we are to realize our developmental goals, investment in health must be granted center stage. So this year, Mr. Speaker, I invite you and honorable members to explore this link a little further. While the reform process has comprised an ongoing series of incremental interventions, the main aim of the initiative is to provide an efficient and effective healthcare system capable of responding to the needs of clients through the development of a comprehensive and integrated healthcare system. The original implementation plan has been amended, Mr. Speaker, to accommodate the realities of our social, political, and economic environments. And what are these realities, Mr. Speaker? What are these realities? The realities are, Mr. Speaker, the financial constraints. The realities are the human resources constraints. The realities are the health-seeking behavior of people. The lack of targeted groups in terms of age, in terms of culture, in terms of gender. When one looks at appropriate healthcare interventions. The realities, Mr. Speaker, honorable members, are the timing of activities to accommodate synergy with other developments, the wider national agenda, and the regional and international mandates. So according to the realities outlined, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Health has come to the realization that the number one driving force for improvements to the health sector, the number one driving force to the improvements in the health sector is the availability of sufficient funds to nurture the change process and ensure the availability of a high quality of services to all. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Health has over the past 2 years been allocated resources from central government in the amount of 67.4 million in 2003-2004. Representing 8% of government's expenditure. 69.4 million in 2004-2005, representing 9%, and 86.0 million in 2005-2006, representing 11% of government's expenditure over the same period, respectively. What I'm attempting to indicate here, Mr. Speaker, is the growth of government expenditure over the years by this government of the Labour administration. And Mr. Speaker, 11% of government expenditure anywhere in the world would pass the test. 11% of government expenditure devoted to health care would pass the test anywhere in the world, Mr. Speaker. Whether you talk about developed countries or whether you talk about developing countries. So according to PAHO 2002, Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia's national health expenditure per capita was $188 compared to $166 of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And GDP per capita is $5,300 in St. Lucia and $5,460 in St. Vincent, $15,290 in Barbados. What we are trying to say here, Mr. Speaker, is that we are progressing to what we want to arrive at. The ministry has achieved its approved revenue target of 6.4 million in 2004-2005. There was an increase in the resources allocated to secondary care in 2004-2005 over the previous year. And despite significant outstanding payables, Mr. Speaker, the ministry was able to contain its expenditure within its approved recurrent estimate of 56 million. So in 2004-2005, capital expenditure of 13.2 million was approved and actual expenditure of 3.8 million was achieved, an implementation rate of 29%. Mr. Speaker, we at the Ministry of Health have recognized this deficiency and we have established a project monitoring committee which will focus on timely implementation and monitoring of all projects. The OECS Human Development Report of 2000 reveals, Mr. Speaker, that increased levels in health expenditures in the OECS countries do not necessarily guarantee improved health status or reduction in health inequalities. Very important point, Mr. Speaker. What does this tell us? This tells us, Mr. Speaker, that the importance of the allocation of monies lies in how it is used. And consequently, our role is to focus our energies and resources on the provision of quality care within the primary and public healthcare system. Over the past 2 years, the Ministry of Health and the National Insurance Corporation have devoted a considerable amount of time and effort to the development of a national health insurance scheme, universal healthcare. We are confident that the establishment of the UHC will mark a watershed in the operations of the health sector in St. Lucia. No longer can we simply stand by and allow the least fortunate among us to be forced to trade off health needs as a result of more pressing demands like food, clothing, and shelter. This financing mechanism, Mr. Speaker, has the potential to do the following. It can drive the quality in the public and private health system. It can introduce more innovative ways to increase resources allocated to the health sector. It can ensure that earlier gains from improved health care are not eroded. It can positively influence health-seeking behavior. It can positively impact on the work ethic among healthcare professionals. It can also increase timely and accurate information to the health sector. It can also, Mr. Speaker, increase public awareness of the health sector.
The Honourable Member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Yes. Mr. Speaker, I take it that you are giving me injury time.
Yes.
Injury time from the constant disruptions. I've been injured and badly wounded by the disruption. So I need injury time, Mr. Speaker. The Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, fully supports the establishment of the UHC strategy as the one component in the equation of sustainable financing to the health sector. During the course of the coming year, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Health intends to throw its weight behind this initiative. We will play our part to ensure that the potential and the benefits of this change will be realized. Universal health care, Mr. Speaker, will be a part of the overall health systemic reforms, all designed to create the appropriate incentives, synergies, and regulations to ensure that the health services achieve the main objectives of improving the well-being of the population in an equitable, efficient, and effective manner. I'll tell you just now. Complementing, Mr. Speaker, this new system of financing with the performance-based budgeting and reporting will ensure efficient use and allocation of the country's scarce resources. How will it do that, Mr. Speaker? This is very important to know, Mr. Speaker. Health is very important. And I said I feel like doing a lot of talking today, Mr. Speaker. How would it do that? The providers at the secondary care level would, through regulation and accreditation, have to provide an improved quality of care to the people of this country. To achieve this, they would have to introduce cost-effective measures and proper controls, thus preventing wastage in their system of operation. So the UHC, Mr. Speaker, will also impact positively on the quality of care in the primary health care system, whereby more financial resources will be made available by the Ministry of Health. So the system, Mr. Speaker, as part of its work program, will have to manage its clients effectively, keeping them well and out of the secondary care system, thus achieving its performance measures and targets. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, with an increased resource flow into the health system, both secondary and primary care must improve on their performance by delivering measurable positive outputs through which the system shall be evaluated. Very important for us, Mr. Speaker, in the Ministry of Health. Mr. Speaker, you cannot plan in health if you do not dabble into the whole business of the demographic and epidemiological profile of St. Lucia. St. Lucia, like the rest of the Eastern Caribbean territories, is undergoing a demographic transition, Mr. Speaker, due to a rise in life expectancy and a decrease in fertility and infant mortality. Life expectancy at birth, Mr. Speaker, rose from 68 in 1994 to 71 in 2003 for men, and from 72 to 77 for women over the same reference period. Instructive. I'll tell you about that later. I'll tell you the results of that. I'll tell you about my increased virility. Women on average now, Mr. Speaker, live up to 5 years longer than men. This increase in age gap is similar to experiences of other islands in the Caribbean region. So that between 1991 and 2001, the population of St. Lucia has grown by 1.5% per annum. The population is projected to grow by 1.2% between 2002 and 2012. Yeah. So immigration also plays a role and is expected to increase in coming years. The age structure of the population shows evidence of the transition, Mr. Speaker. The population less than 15 has dropped from 37% in 1993 to 30% in 2003. While the 15 to 44 age category is increasing slowly and presently represents 25% of the population. See, Mr. Speaker, that is what the opposition, this is the kind of research that the oppositions must engage in to come and give meaningful contributions to the House. Mr. Speaker, the 65 and over age category is increasing and accounts for 7.2% of the population. That means that planning has to be done for this category of people, Mr. Speaker. An increase of 1.2% over a decade. 65 and over. And Mr. Speaker, the Caribbean Epidemiology Center estimates that by 2025, the elderly, defined as persons greater than 60 years, will constitute 17.1% of the Caribbean population. The time for planning for this elderly population is now. The trend coupled by other trends, such as the change in disease patterns closely associated with change in lifestyles, will continue to alter the demand and consequently the supply for healthcare, Mr. Speaker. That is why we must begin to look at that now. A steady decrease in fertility rates is evident over the last decade. From 1994, Mr. Speaker, to 2003, fertility rates have declined from 2.9 to 1.9, representing an all-time low. This is supported by a general decline in the crude birth rate to 15 per thousand of the population. What are the contributing factors to this decline, Mr. Speaker? What are the contributing factors to the increases in the crude birth rate and the fertility rate? The decrease in these factors can be attributed to increased levels of education, family planning program intervention in the area of sexual and reproductive health. Change in gender roles, Mr. Speaker, also account for the change as more women are absorbed into the labor force. So given these developments, Mr. Speaker, there's a tendency to delay pregnancy, and women therefore have fewer pregnancies during their lifetime. But these factors, Mr. Speaker, have contributed to a decrease in teenage pregnancies to 18%. I'll repeat that, Mr. Speaker. These factors have contributed to a decrease in teenage pregnancies to 18% of all live births in 2003 compared to 20% in 1994. All important for health planning and management, Mr. Speaker, and honorable members on the opposite side. And the demographic transition, Mr. Speaker, is accompanied by an epidemiological transition portrayed as a shift in the mortality pattern. So chronic non-communicable diseases such as heart disease, stroke, diabetes, hypertension, and cancer have become the main causes of mortality and morbidity and represent a huge cost to our hospital and pharmaceutical budgets. So you see where the money has to go, Mr. Speaker. The top five leading causes of death in 2003, in order of rank, Mr. Speaker, include diabetes, cerebrovascular diseases, heart diseases, hypertension, and cancer. So when mortality data is disaggregated by age and sex, data reveals that the highest mortality rates are in the 65 age group. That is 56.7%, followed by the under one age group of 14.6%. So the neonatal rates are high, and this requires urgent attention. The Ministry of Health is presently reviewing programs, Mr. Speaker, designed to address this issue, and will be mounting educational campaigns to reduce preventable deaths in this age range. No knee-jerk reaction, Mr. Speaker. Study it. Go about it scientifically, examine the demographic trends, examine the epidemiological trends, and plan. No knee-jerk reaction. No knee-jerk reaction. When mortality, Mr. Speaker, is taken into account, using the measurement of years of potential life loss, accidents and adverse effects account. Listen to this. Mr. Speaker, accidents and adverse effects, I'll come to that, account for the greatest loss of life than any other leading cause of death. This is followed by perinatal, which means 0 to 28 days, where we look at conditions, perinatal conditions, where we look at cancer, heart disease, and homicide. Mr. Speaker, this measurement has significant implications for national development.
The honourable member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move for the suspension of Standing Order 32-8 to permit the honourable Minister of Health an additional 1 hour within which to complete his presentation to this honourable House.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 32-8 be suspended to allow the Honourable Minister of Health an additional 1 hour to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Minister, leave is granted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Thank you for the entry time. Mr. Speaker, trends in mortality rates reveal that from the reference period 1994 to 2003, there was a slight decrease in the mortality rates from 6.6 to 6.5. The infant mortality rates have remained below the target of 30 per thousand. Although underreporting and misclassification of stillbirths may conceal the actual figure, maternal and child health intervention programs and also immunization coverage have been successful in reducing infant deaths. A closer examination of infant mortality, however, reveals some disturbing trends, Mr. Speaker. Neonatal deaths represented approximately 75% of all infant deaths from 1998 to 2003. What is the explanation of this situation, Speaker? The explanation for this situation may lie in the fact that many pregnant women have risk factors such as poor nutrition, maternal drug and alcohol use, emotional and physical abuse, sexually transmitted infections, smoking, and teen pregnancies. Now, Mr. Speaker, where these conditions are not addressed early in the first trimester, they have the potential to cause low fetal growth, fetal malnutrition, and premature delivery. Babies born, Mr. Speaker, under these conditions suffer increased risks of dying, long periods of morbidity throughout early childhood, and suffer reduced ability to fulfill their human potential. The main communicable diseases presently being addressed by the Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, include dengue fever, tuberculosis, childhood diseases covered under the expanded program for immunization, and HIV/AIDS. To date, Mr. Speaker, there have been 452 reported cases of HIV/AIDS, 238 of which have developed AIDS-related diseases, and 217 have died. There has been, Mr. Speaker, steady increase in new cases from 30 cases between 1985 to 1988 to 152 cases from 2001 to 2004. Children under 15 years account for 10% of all cases. This, Mr. Speaker, is a cause for concern. The age category of the highest risk, Mr. Speaker, is the 15 to 19 age group. 15 to 19 age group. Yes. The age group accounts for 77% of all infections, followed by the 15 to 24 category. Males, Mr. Speaker, represent 56% of all reported cases, 57% among adults 15 to 49, and 69% of all cases among persons 50 and over. Females accounted for 69% of all cases among the youth 15 to 24, and 94% of cases among teenagers 15 to 19. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, the HIV trends reveal an increase in new cases reported among women, particularly over the last 5 years. The main mode of transmission remains unprotected heterosexual sex. Mr. Speaker, I do not need to go into details on what we need to do, personally and otherwise. An examination of the dengue cases over a 9-year period revealed that on average, 3 to 10 cases are reported annually, Mr. Speaker. All three types have been circulating since 1970. And with respect to communicable diseases, there is a potential for an outbreak anytime, Mr. Speaker. There is thus an urgent need to continue to address the risk factors. These include high mosquito indices and the climate where the rainy season, coupled with poor sanitation and drainage, that present opportunities for breeding. The fact that there exists no specific treatment or vaccine makes this condition worthy of urgent attention, and we are looking at that. There has been a steady decrease in the incidence of tuberculosis, Mr. Speaker, from 1996 to 2003 due to improved detection and reporting. However, 22 confirmed cases were reported in 2002 and 15 in 2003. The age group 40 and over are most affected, Mr. Speaker. The male-to-female ratio was 2 to 1 in 1996. But that has evened out to a 1-to-1 ratio since 1999. So treatment success for this condition has been realized through the implementation of what is referred to as the direct observation therapy, DOTS. The success being realized is commendable, Mr. Speaker, but we must guard against complacency. If we look at our mental health situation, Mr. Speaker, and we examine the patient census at the Golden Hope Hospital, which ranges from 150 to 170, we can see that the major or the majority of clients comprise the 15 to 44 age group, followed by the 45 to 46 to 64 group, Mr. Speaker. Males comprise 64% of the population and account for 30%, making up the largest number of chronic cases for men and acute cases, accounting for 37%. But, Mr. Speaker, what is significant about this is that there's a 28% difference between the cases for the number of men. psychogeriatrics contributed 14%, which is small, but a significant portion of clients, Mr. Speaker. So what is important about this is that in light of the increasing elderly population and the social and economic challenges facing adolescents and males, the Ministry of Health must ensure that interventions target the root cause of the increasing trend. So, Mr. Speaker, after giving you this health profile, this national health profile, what can be seen as the implications of all of this, Mr. Speaker? According to the demographic epidemiological profile, this national health profile, it can be suggested, Mr. Speaker, that in St. Lucia, we face an increasing number of healthcare problems. We are challenged to respond more effectively and efficiently to these problems, Mr. Speaker. But we intend to respond in a systematic, systemic, national, comprehensive manner, being guided by our health reform pillars of equity, efficiency, effectiveness, and the health promotion strategy. We need to do that, Mr. Speaker. The Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, has been actively implementing health sector reform during the financial year 2004-2005. The health budget for 2005-2006, Mr. Speaker, will be presented in the context of the health sector reform agenda, which was accepted by the Cabinet of Ministers in 2000. We have remained true to this agenda in our quest, Mr. Speaker, to improve quality of life and death for all. Mr. Speaker, you may be wondering what I mean by the quality of death. By the quality of death, Mr. Speaker, I mean that we need to ensure that persons who are terminally ill are provided appropriate and acceptable care so that they are assisted in the preparation for death. We are talking about hospice care and palliative services designed to prepare persons for death so that that can be improved. The issues of right to life and dying a dignified death will be addressed, Mr. Speaker. We have been implementing health reform under a phased approach, Mr. Speaker. And I want to look at the 9 objectives we have had, Mr. Speaker, under the 3 phases. Objective number 1, Mr. Speaker, when I stood up in this house during the 2004-2005 debate, I outlined 9 objectives that we were trying to meet over the 3 phases, Mr. Speaker. Permit me, Mr. Speaker, to go through these. First objective, Mr. Speaker, we intended to reduce health risks associated with selected environmental conditions and issues through effective health education and promotion, regulation, and monitoring and evaluation of programs. And we have begun to do that, Mr. Speaker, under the food program. The food program has enabled, Mr. Speaker, the inspection, registration, and licensing of food handling establishments in all 8 regions. We were able to develop and implement training programs for food handlers and inspected food for wholesomeness. 789 food handling establishments were inspected to ensure compliance with food safety standards. 70% restaurants, 80% hotels. Through the Public Health Board, Mr. Speaker, and the Department of Environmental Health, we embarked on a more forceful implementation of the food regulations, thereby achieving more compliance and improved safety for the public. Total revenue increased, Mr. Speaker, by 6.9% over the established target. And then, Mr. Speaker, we promulgated a new Food Safety Act and regulations. Drinking water, and we looked at drinking water as well, Mr. Speaker, and through the Drinking Water and Waste Management Program, the Ministry of Health was able to improve efforts at monitoring and enforcement of potable water according to the PAHO guidelines for drinking water quality, the Public Health Act, and other enabling regulations. And during this year, Mr. Speaker, all 29 municipal distribution systems were monitored for adherence to guidelines for drinking water quality. With respect to waste management, the Environmental Health Department was able to increase the number of plants reviewed within the statutory 31-day period as evidence of our continuing efforts to implement a more efficient plan review process. Our school dental health program, Mr. Speaker, has been launched, and the program targets the dental health needs of school-age children. Food and nutrition, Mr. Speaker, we have been promoting the integration of programs designed to increase opportunities for clients to a wide range of services and enhanced treatment and care programs. One example of this, Mr. Speaker, one very good example was the establishment of the nutrition protocols and guidelines for the management of HIV/AIDS. Eye health and disabilities have not been left unattended, Mr. Speaker, for the benefit of the member for Miku North. The ministry entered, Mr. Speaker, into an agreement with the St. Lucia Blind Welfare Association. This agreement establishes a formal process of collaboration that facilitates the implementation of a national program of eye health. That's a unique approach, Mr. Speaker, in health for the delivery of a comprehensive public program through a formal cooperation between a local NGO and the Ministry of Health. We lost, Mr. Speaker, our ophthalmologists during the last financial year. And we have had difficulty recruiting a suitable doctor to deliver our ophthalmic services. Mr. Speaker, the difficulty is not merely because of the human resource element, but because of the poor state of the eye equipment and the facilities in the public sector. We admit that. So our response is the reconstruction of Ward 5 and 6 at Victoria Hospital to reinstate the eye ward. Through the strengthened cooperation, Mr. Speaker, we will strengthen cooperation with the St. Lucia Blind Welfare Association. We will together address the recruitment of an ophthalmologist and the equipment needs. In terms of disabilities, Mr. Speaker, we have been involved and support the national policy for persons with disabilities. And what about improved vector management, Mr. Speaker? That we have done. We have developed, Mr. Speaker, an integrated vector control policy. This has been accepted and is guiding our vector control program. And with that, Mr. Speaker, we have the Emergency Rodent Control and Coordination Program, whereby the Ministry of Health has expanded its response to the rodent infestation problem through the establishment of the Rodent Coordination and Control Program. This program, Mr. Speaker, has established 2 pilot sites. The program is being executed in 3 phases: national public awareness and the education campaign, the implementation of the Rodent Control Program through sanitation, looking at a 3-pronged strategy, namely sanitation, keeping the environment clean, exclusion, keeping them out of dwelling and commercial properties, another breeding and feeding sites, and baiting, Mr. Speaker, using rodenticides. You see, Mr. Speaker, one of the things we have learned in the Ministry of Health is that if you can bait as much as you want, if our attitudes and behavior do not change, we shall never be able to deal with the rat problem in this country. Because the rats, if they can pick up the bones, if they can pick up the bones and the little pieces of things we leave along the streets, they will go to those little pieces of bones and all the pieces of food and things on the streets before they take the bait. They are intelligent. The best thing to do is to starve them of the little portions of food that we leave lying around the place, so that they will eat the bait and therefore we can take care of them. But Mr. Speaker, we'll come more to rats a little later at the appointed time. Mice and rats and all of that. Mr. Speaker, our second objective was to improve health and wellness through health prevention and promotion strategy. Yes, Mr. Speaker knows that there is a mouse in the house. Mr. Speaker, last year the Ministry of Health reaffirmed its commitment to primary care and declared the health promotion strategy as the strategy for the development of health systems and interventions. We want this to be comprehensive. We want a proactive response and to ensuring health and wellness among all groups within the population, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, we are looking at formulating healthy public policy, reorienting health services, empowering communities, creating supportive environments, developing personal life skills, and building alliances. Mr. Speaker, primary health clinics at all health centers continue to ensure that all clients have access to prevention activities. Attendance at clinics and immunization coverage remains high at approximately 98%. That's important to note, Mr. Speaker. So the Bureau of Health Education continues to ensure that health prevention activities are provided, and they have targeted specific groups, specific populations on STIs, including HIV/AIDS, where 3,652 persons were contacted. Diabetes and hypertension management with 1,903 community members contacted. Cancer education with 724 community members dealt with. Health and family education, where a total of 2,259 persons were trained in life skills. The Ministry of Health is moving on, Mr. Speaker. A third objective we looked at last year was to reduce the transmission and to mitigate the impact of those infected or affected by HIV/AIDS. And we know all of the plans that have come to the fore on that, Mr. Speaker. We have received the grant funding from the World Bank to the tune of $21 million. The UNFPA AIDS Youth Project, grant funding of $800,000, the Irish Fund of $133,000, and of course we have the Global Fund for the entire OECS looking at our antiretroviral drugs. In addition, Mr. Speaker, we have looked at the development of management structures to coordinate and manage the funds and execute the HIV/AIDS strategic plan. The structure includes the National AIDS Control Council, the National AIDS Program Secretariat, and the National Coordinating Committee on HIV/AIDS. I'm especially pleased, Mr. Speaker, to inform the public that during the year, we have been able to bring 37 persons diagnosed with HIV/AIDS into a comprehensive care and support program, including free antiretroviral medication. Our clinical team, headed by Dr. Granderson Didier, and the resources available through the Clinton Foundation are primarily responsible for this success. We have seen improved collaboration between the NGOs, the faith-based organizations, the ministries, and all other NGOs, including the AIDS Action Foundation for workplace interventions and workplace policy development. But Mr. Speaker, there is something I would like to address you and honorable members on, Mr. Speaker, sir. There is an ongoing debate among health workers on the issue of confidentiality versus secrecy. And there is need to resolve this debate, Mr. Speaker, to ensure a comprehensive continuum of care. There is also need to impact on people's attitude and behavior. Mr. Speaker, we also have a third objective, which is to facilitate the creation of alliances in an effort to provide quality healthcare services for the entire nation by way of partnerships with all relevant agencies. Mr. Speaker, the issue of quality, our response to this, of course, is something where we talk about quality. And we know that the issue of quality has always been a challenge. During the past year, a proposal for the establishment of a quality improvement mechanism for the health system was developed. PAHO designed a quality framework. This framework, Mr. Speaker, was used to determine the extent to which the St. Lucian health sector was operating within a quality mode. And the evaluation exercise found that there was need to move into quality mode by ensuring that the foundation of the quality system was in place. The Community Nursing Service is actively preparing to evaluate its service provision using the template developed by PAHO. In preparation for the establishment of the UHC, the Ministry of Health and the NIC contracted the Canadian Council on Health Accreditation Services to conduct a risk assessment of the main secondary and tertiary care providers. The assessment exercise found, Mr. Speaker, that the health sector has not been operating within a quality of culture. A culture of quality. The report revealed that much work, Mr. Speaker, needs to be done at all the institutions. St. Jude Hospital and Tapio Hospital, with commitment, can achieve accreditation in 3 years. Golden Hope Hospital will need to be rebuilt. As we have said before, confirming, Mr. Speaker, the wisdom and benefit of the new mental health facility being donated by the People's Republic of China. The projected time to achieve accreditation of the mental health services is 6 years, Mr. Speaker. And Victoria Hospital also requires 6 years to achieve accreditation, as does Turning Point. And you know, Mr. Speaker, this assessment report reveals too that the governance of the public institutions has a major deficiency. St. Jude was number one, Mr. Speaker. And a prerequisite to being able to move along the path to accreditation. Hence the rationale for the ministry's support, Mr. Speaker, for the change of governance for Victoria Hospital, Golden Hope Hospital, and Turning Point. The lessons gained from St. Jude Hospital and active consultations with workers and major stakeholders, Mr. Speaker, are guiding us along the path to statutorization, to devolve authority, making these institutions more autonomous. So there's ongoing discussion with the stakeholders, Mr. Speaker, by a specially developed committee with the Victoria Hospital to look at the change of governance. We are also looking, Mr. Speaker, at our labs. All medical laboratories, including both private and public labs, are part of the initiative of the Caribbean Epidemiology Center, whereby funding was secured for the strengthening of laboratory services in the Eastern Caribbean. The main objective of the initiative is to improve the quality of laboratory services in St. Lucia. Therefore, in August 2004, a National Advisory Council was established. The main achievement, Mr. Speaker, was the development of a quality manual in accordance with the International Standard Organization, which is specific to lab strengthening for the purpose of accreditation. And Mr. Speaker, there are other challenges facing the health sector as it struggles to improve quality. These include staff recruitment and retention. The main issues here deal with solutions to the migration of health professionals, the most immediate being the management of nurse migration. And then there's the issue of follow-up care and case management between all levels of care, including the implementation of efficient and effective information systems. What has been our response to this, Mr. Speaker? We know that human resource issues were placed on the front burner during the past year, Mr. Speaker. So therefore, local studies on nurse migration issue reveal that the main problems facing the nurse profession was disaffection brought about by feelings of lack of appreciation, lack of benefits, and few opportunities for training and appropriate remuneration. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, a committee on nurse migration was established. This committee developed a position paper on nurse migration in St. Lucia, which outlined the key problems experienced by nurses in the health sector and made recommendations to respond to the situation of nurse migration. These recommendations will be implemented this year, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I would like now to move on to some of the other challenges that we have. Mr. Speaker, we have had some infrastructural improvements whereby we have looked at the development and improvements of physical infrastructure. We have looked at the refurbishment of the Victoria Hospital and improvements to service delivery, the radiology unit, the surgery intensive care unit, through the NIC grant, Mr. Speaker. And I want to compliment the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance for negotiating with the National Insurance Corporation for this grant for the radiology unit and the surgery intensive care unit. The Ministry of Health would like to extend, Mr. Speaker, its congratulations. We are looking at the rehabilitation of the Golden Hope Hospital and repairs to health centers. This year, Mr. Speaker, we rehabilitated the Babano Health Center and commissioned the Lager Health Center. That Lager Health Facility, will improve access to primary health care, which was affected by the closing of the Bojis Health Center. We have looked at repairs to the senior citizens' home and the establishment of acute mental health beds in the Soufre Hospital. We have looked at the refurbishment of a waiting area at the Denry Hospital and the enhancement of medical supplies and equipment. We all know, Mr. Speaker, that we are looking at the new general and new mental health facility An area, Mr. Speaker, which this government is very proud of. Mr. Speaker, in addition, we committed ourselves to a seventh objective to facilitate access to health funds for personal health care services, where we have looked at medical assistance. Mr. Speaker, this is an important point. Through the medical assistance budget of the Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, 66 clients were provided with assistance to access overseas care. This fund, Mr. Speaker, is complemented, of course, by the National Community Foundation of the NIC, and there are other mechanisms of private insurance and out-of-pocket expenses and exemptions. But, Mr. Speaker, we must admit that the existing system does not achieve the stated objectives of equity, efficiency, and effectiveness. And the result is that many deserving persons do not get access to the health care they require. Our response, Mr. Speaker, is to redesign the system within the UHC initiative. We have also agreed to the development of a cooperation strategy with the Martinican officials, Mr. Speaker, to address access to health services in Martinique in a more equitable, efficient, and effective manner, Mr. Speaker. We have looked at efforts to reduce the number of clients bypassing health facilities and presenting at Victoria Hospital. That has been a major problem for us, Mr. Speaker. People bypassing the health facilities and going to Victoria Hospital and causing some difficulty in the accident and emergency section. This year, 75% of the patients from the Groseillers environs who often bypass the Groseillers polyclinic and present at Victoria Hospital were treated at the Groseillers polyclinic.
Honourable Member for Mikuno. The standing orders require that you conduct yourself in a fit and proper manner. Please proceed, Honourable Member.
This institution, Mr. Speaker, has realised the success, Mr. Speaker, was achieved by building the capacity of the urgent care and medical clinics to respond to client needs. This institution, Mr. Speaker, also realized a 42% increase in cash revenue due to increased client attendance and compliance. So, Mr. Speaker, all the criticisms we are hearing, this is where the Ministry of Health is moving, Mr. Speaker. Yes, we realize we have many challenges. Yes, we realize we have many difficulties and problems. But yes, we are addressing them one by one and move into the world-class health system that we want to look into. I am pleased to announce, Mr. Speaker, that in terms of the drug procurement mechanisms under the OECS-PPS agreement, we have been able to lower the cost of drugs. With respect to improve access to drugs, I am pleased to announce that 80% of the medical supplies utilized at the Victoria Hospital and community services are now being procured through the bulk procurement services of the OECS-PPS. I could not understand, Mr. Speaker, why the Victoria Hospital was purchasing drugs on its own and not using the OECS-PPS so that we could reduce the cost of drugs by bulk purchasing. So according to the finding of a survey on the cost reduction potential of the regional procurement mechanism, up to 80% cost reduction would be achieved. Our ninth objective, Mr. Speaker, is to provide a system through which all persons, especially vulnerable groups, are able to access an essential package of healthcare services. And we have responded with that, Mr. Speaker, brilliantly. We are cognizant that a piecemeal approach to the issue of funding the health sector and making healthcare accessible to all persons in need of care can no longer continue. And therefore, we have collaborated with the NIC. And we have looked at a health financing mechanism, and we have all talked about the ideals and the great proposals of the universal health care. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Health is in a mode now not only of reform, but in charting and developing a strategic direction. And therefore, we are looking at a national health strategic plan. We have remained focused, Mr. Speaker, on developing a strategic direction for the health sector. So multidisciplinary technical groups have developed technical plans using a log frame approach. With the assistance of grant funding from the European Union, a consultancy firm, Health Research, Research for Action, going by the acronym HERA, has been selected to develop the National Health Strategic Plan, and PAHO has agreed to provide assistance to execute the health plan. The tactical plans, Mr. Speaker, outline results under 12 priority health areas: communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, sexual and reproductive health, child and adolescent health, environmental health, oral health, emergency medical services, mental health and substance abuse, food and nutrition, violence and injury, eye health and disabilities, social protection. These are the 12 areas we are looking at in terms of our strategic plan, Mr. Speaker. But we have some priorities and challenges. I have outlined to you before the challenge of the communicable and non-communicable diseases, which are posing significant threats to the health and well-being of all Saint-Lucians. Lifestyle diseases are responsible for high rates of mortality and morbidity, Mr. Speaker. What are the strategies that we will be looking at during this year? We are looking at controlling and reducing the impact of communicable and non-communicable diseases, Mr. Speaker, by improving the surveillance system, networking and team building, coordination of funds to all components of the national response strategies. And we are also implementing the health promotion strategy as the strategy for poverty reduction, disease control, and the achievement of healthy lifestyles. We know we have an aging plant and equipment, Mr. Speaker, and we have looked at the strategy of the rehabilitation of the 24 health centers targeted in phase one of our plan through a combination of grant and loan funding from BNTF, the World Bank, and the CDB Economic Reconstruction Program. To date, we have completed the design of the new national hospital. We are completing the site preparation, road design and construction. That's what we are doing, and we hope to commence construction of this new modern health facility by October of this year. And we are not leaving out our mentally ill, Mr. Speaker, and you know about the People's Republic of China, their donation of the wonderful facility that we are about to look at. Mr. Speaker, during the course of the financial year, we will develop policies and protocols on the treatment, care, and support of mentally ill patients. We shall also develop operational plans for the new mental health facility. It is important, Mr. Speaker, that we remove stigma and labeling and discrimination from our people who are mentally ill. And therefore, we are designing a communication strategy to sensitize the general public on mental health issues and the new model of care to be applied to treatment, care, and support of the mentally ill. We are also hoping to complete the structural and institutional requirements for the completion and activation of the SUFRE Mental Health Project, where we are going to train and hire staff, commence the construction of the Mental Health Resource Center, complete the construction of the crisis beds in the SUFRE Hospital. Primary health care reform, Mr. Speaker, is on our agenda, high on the agenda, because we see it as the foundation of the entire health system. And we are going to proceed with that, Mr. Speaker. We will continue primary care reform through the following activities: the rationalization of the health services and health infrastructure. And this exercise, Mr. Speaker, will categorize health facilities according to populations and needs on a regional level with main and satellite healthcare facilities. And this will be done in order to achieve the following, Mr. Speaker. It will be done to use all available resources in the most effective and efficient manner. It will respond to the geographical challenges of the health sector. It will ensure access to services at multiple points in the healthcare system. And institutional strengthening will take place through training and sensitization and the introduction of community and regional health teams with appointed team leaders. This needs to be done, Mr. Speaker. Health is a team approach. We need to reintroduce community and regional health teams with appointed team leaders. We need to look at the integration of health programs and services through the appointment of program heads and the strengthening of the integrated planning approach, and ensure a comprehensive package of services through the development of effective referral systems between levels of healthcare. That strategy, Mr. Speaker, will be financed by the CDB, BNTF, and the World Bank Healthcare Center project. The HIV/AIDS program, we have already spoken about, Mr. Speaker, as one of our main planks in terms of our action this year. But very importantly, Mr. Speaker, as I said before, we need to establish a culture of quality. The Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, is not operating within a culture of quality. So we are looking at our departments. We are looking to see that quality exists in all of our programs, and therefore we will have an overall quality improvement system. That is what we want to look at. So this year, the NIC, the Ministry of Health, and the health institutions, Mr. Speaker, will design a quality improvement system for the health sector, design contracts and action plans with all major hospitals and the Drug Rehabilitation Center, that is Turning Point, to achieve accreditation within 6 years. The Ministry of Health, Mr. Speaker, will be working to implement the quality system and engender a culture of quality at all levels of the healthcare system. And we intend to use certain strategies to do that, Mr. Speaker. Develop our action plans, design and implement our communication strategies, and so on. Mr. Speaker, we have a lack of adequate human resource development as a challenge in the health sector, and that we have to look at. The situation, Mr. Speaker, is further compounded by challenges concerning migration of our skilled staff. Doctors, nurses, other health professionals are being attracted to North America and the United Kingdom, Mr. Speaker, in search of better conditions of work and professional challenges. Mr. Speaker, our human resource challenges include the regulation of health professionals, the availability of training, the high cost of training outside of the country and the sub-region, the lack of human resource and training plans, and the effective use of performance management measures. What is our strategy with regard to this, Mr. Speaker? We want to develop a human resource management and training plan. And in response to the surplus of returning medical graduates, we have decided, Mr. Speaker, to institute a medical internship program at the two general hospitals, which I am reliably informed is working well at both VH and St. Jude. This program, Mr. Speaker, provides medical graduates with the work experience required to be fully registered for St. Lucia and the region. So the government of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, has committed itself to ensuring that all medical personnel meet the requirements to be fully registered to work. Further, we are using the internship period to enhance skills so that the public has a high-quality pool of medical practitioners available in the public and private sectors. And we will introduce to, Mr. Speaker, licensing for medical practitioners and all allied health professionals, and improve the licensing for medical facilities. Mr. Speaker, licensing will allow for more effective regulation and quality improvement. We will develop and review restructuring and strengthening proposals in response to understaffing in mental health, in the Mental Health and Human Services, and in the Bureau of Health, Education and Nutrition, Mr. Speaker. And there is so much more that we'll be looking at with regard to that. We have a challenge, Mr. Speaker, of a lack of management and the information system. And therefore, our strategy, Mr. Speaker, is to collaborate with the NIC and the CDB Economic Reconstruction Program project to design and establish a health management and information system, Mr. Speaker. And the Ministry of Health proposes to develop policies and protocols to guide the collection, analysis, and dissemination of information. Because, Mr. Speaker, we are moving to improving connectivity and information sharing between health facilities and relevant stakeholders through the design and implementation of a health management and information system. Mr. Speaker, We also have the challenge of a lack of an effective national emergency medical system. Individually, Mr. Speaker, the various agencies involved in emergency services have been working assiduously to respond to the numerous calls for medical assistance and the control of fires and other hazards. I want to compliment them, Mr. Speaker. However, the resources allocated to these activities are not effectively coordinated or utilized. And therefore, the issue is that the issue we are trying to highlight for some time now is that there is an urgency to deal with effective coordination and utilization, and of course that is heightened in the light of World Cup 2007 preparations. What is our strategy, Mr. Speaker? In collaboration with all the relevant stakeholders, we'll establish a structure which will coordinate all emergency services and integrate the emergency room and pre-hospital emergency services. We shall employ, Mr. Speaker, emergency medical specialists to design and coordinate and implement the system. And the resources will be raised from the existing budget, and additional funding is earmarked to be received through the implementation of the UAC. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, another key priority and challenge for us is the lack of adequate space and security for storage and access to drugs. And we are dealing with that, Mr. Speaker, by the temporary relocation of the drug procurement unit. We are also going to hire two additional staff to improve drug surveillance and inspections. And we'll hire additional pharmacists to meet the shortage of pharmacists that we now face, Mr. Speaker. Another priority and another challenge for us in the Ministry of Health. We have a lot of challenges, Mr. Speaker, but there are also top priorities. It's the effective regulation of offshore medical schools. Mr. Speaker, there are at present five offshore medical schools registered in St. Lucia, but only three are operational. Two of these schools are located in Beaufort and work closely with the St. Jude Hospital. Mr. Speaker, this type of relationship with medical schools or students is not new. The St. Jude Hospital has played host to medical schools and students for decades as a result of the former management agreement between Mercy Hospital and the government of St. Lucia. But there is a considerable potential benefit for this institution to develop alliances with the medical schools. The benefits, Mr. Speaker, of operating this facility in this mode is extensive. Mr. Speaker, I believe that education is good business, and I believe it can increase the efforts of this hospital to become more economically viable and thereby increase opportunities for sustainability. These include increases in the range of services, you name it, resources, and the high standards of required for medical teaching facilities. But, Mr. Speaker, the regulation of these schools needs to be such that the United States Department of Education standards are applied and monitored in a manner that the United States Department of Education accepts the accreditation of our medical schools. So what is our strategy regarding this particular fact, Mr. Speaker? We are going to evaluate the potential of the St. Jude Hospital to support medical education, a potential area of investment, Mr. Speaker. We are going to enhance the regulatory and the accreditation system for medical schools in St. Lucia through the enactment of appropriate legislation. There are going to be training activities and the drafting of legislation and policy which commenced in the last financial year and will be concluded in this financial year. We have spoken, Mr. Speaker, of the challenge of the resource gap, and we have already spoken of the UHC as a potential strategy, and so we are going to continue to work on the UHC approach, Mr. Speaker. We are also going to look at human resource management and development plan, the design of a health management and information system, a work plan to enable all institutions to move towards accreditation, etc., etc. But, Mr. Speaker, we have to also develop the strategic direction, as I said before. And we know that there are challenges, but we have the strategies that we are looking at, Mr. Speaker. And it is important that we begin this year, and in fact we are doing that. And we have established the effort already at the Ministry of Health to coordinate all activities related to the development of the National Health Strategic Plan. And the main deliverables for this financial year regarding the Health Strategic Plan is as follows. We are going to have an institutional review of the Ministry of Health and other providers to determine the new roles and responsibilities of the main stakeholders in the health sector and develop an effective management system. We are going to evaluate the health financing options, Mr. Speaker, presented in the Universal Healthcare Proposal and the feasibility of implementing health financing reform. There is need for us this year, Mr. Speaker, to assess the information needs of the health sector and to evaluate the proposals to implement a health management and information system. We are also going to look at the capacity building of the corporate planning department in the Ministry of Health, a very hard-working department, Mr. Speaker, that I would like to commend. And the program managers as well, Mr. Speaker, responsible for program development and implementation in the following areas: strategic planning, economic analysis, management systems in health, development and maintenance of information systems. And Mr. Speaker, we are going to look at facilitating an enabling environment. Our policy direction, Mr. Speaker, is one of the key prerequisites of the reform agenda. And in this financial year, 2005-2006, the Ministry of Health will concentrate on the following policy direction. We are going to reposition and restructure the Ministry of Health. We are going to look at increasing access and equity to health care for all. We are going to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of all healthcare institutions, medical and support staff. Our policy initiative will also look at developing a sustainable financial mechanism or sustainable financial mechanisms. Our policy direction too, Mr. Speaker, will look at areas of the Ministry of Health in terms of turning it around from the point of view of looking at what we call the PRP principle, Mr. Speaker. Policy, regulation, and purchasing. We need, Mr. Speaker, to allow the institutions to run their affairs, to give them autonomy, while the Ministry of Health devolves that power and authority to these institutions. We look at policy, regulation, and purchasing. And Mr. Speaker, I want to look at the Ministry of Health from the point of view of a business entity, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, in concluding this section of my stewardship, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the many persons who have contributed to the new direction of the Ministry of Health, and through their efforts, they have served to make last year a great success for the Ministry of Health. And so, Mr. Speaker, endowed with this protective and supportive cloak, the Ministry is aligned to a path of success. To all the clients who access the healthcare system, you have demonstrated faith in the health sector. To the healthcare professionals and auxiliary staff who have worked assiduously to ensure that clients are cared for at all levels of the health sector, I commend you and I thank you. Your efforts, all of your efforts, are commendable. The program managers, the administrators, the planners, the policy makers of the health sector, the sector depends on you for your vision and insight. I thank you. I thank you for your contribution to paving the way forward to the health sector. To all our local, regional, and international partners, I extend our thanks through our alliances. Through our alliances, we have come a long way. As a result of your efforts, we are that much closer to achieving the goal of health for all by 2020. I want to thank the Chief Medical Officer for strong technical leadership within the Ministry. I want to thank the Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of the Public Service, for having understood and work closer with us to reach the objectives and goals of the Ministry of Health. But now I turn to my constituency, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we have done, and I want to thank my people of Denry South for their unwavering support, and I want to thank all of those who assisted during the passage of Hurricane Ivan. It was a joy to see people come together on that particular day, Mr. Speaker, helping to remove people near the beach and put them in higher ground and taking care of them. I commend all of the volunteers, the Denry Disaster Preparedness Committee, the police, the fire service officers, the Denry Village Council, the members of the Denry Village Council, all of those volunteers, Mr. Speaker. It was a joy to see them work under very, very trying conditions. I have had some achievements, Mr. Speaker, during the 2004-2005 year in review. We continued the rural electrification and street lighting program throughout the constituency. We also constructed 2 footpaths, Mr. Speaker, via self-help in La Pointe. And we also constructed a pedestrian bridge linking White Rock Gardens and other communities like Newfield, Mr. Speaker. And, of course, that is important for our school children who had to cross a river before, Mr. Speaker. And you can understand the attendant dangers in going through that particular stream, which could become quite dangerous during heavy rainfall. And we have engaged also, Mr. Speaker, in drainage building and rehabilitation works in the White Rock Gardens, in the Rocky Lane Green Mountain area, and also in Victoria Street. We have looked at roads rehabilitation, Mr. Speaker, minor rehabilitation in Bajoli, and I want to commend the residents of Bajoli, including the honorable member to my right, where they have come together, Mr. Speaker, to build a drain, and then the Ministry of Communications and Works did assist with only minor rehabilitation, Mr. Speaker. And of course, there's the Green Mountain Rocky Lane area that received some minor repair, Mr. Speaker, and drainage works. In Lakai, Mr. Speaker, some of the residents were relocated because of the housing facility that has been constructed there by CLECO in collaboration with the government of St. Lucia. And because of that, Mr. Speaker, we had to construct some semblance of a road for our people in Lakai, Mr. Speaker, and that is near completion. And we have potholing, Mr. Speaker, that has been done on High Street and Hospital Road. Mr. Speaker, there is a very important entity in Denry called the Denry Development Foundation that was registered sometime last year, Mr. Speaker, following closely on the heels of the Sufre Development Foundation and what has obtained in Labri. And that Denry Development Foundation is doing a tremendous amount of work, Mr. Speaker, such that it hosted the first sports festival in Denry in May 2004, and the second sports festival will be held sometime next month or month after in Denry, Mr. Speaker. It has brought many people together, Mr. Speaker, not only cricket and football and netball and sports for the young, for the children, but it has also looked at dominoes and wowie and drafts for the more senior people in our constituency, Mr. Speaker, and that is commendable. Mr. Speaker, we also hosted a successful 7th annual fish festival, Mr. Speaker, the best village fish festival in the country. The best fish festival in the country, Mr. Speaker. And I want to commend the fishermen who have come on board and who have taken charge of the festival, Mr. Speaker. That is so important for us. I'm talking about the annual fish festival, out of which grew the Denry Seafood Fiesta, being held every Saturday night near the Denry waterfront, Mr. Speaker. So, the Honourable Member for Anslerey Canries, I stand corrected. But, Mr. Speaker, You look at, we also look at the installation, we also look at the rehabilitation of the Denry football field, and in addition to that, what we have done now is that we have installed stands there, Mr. Speaker, through the effort of the Denry Youth and Sports Council. But I also need to talk about the revival of the Denry Youth and Sports Council after a youth and sports festival. And more importantly, Mr. Speaker, I want to commend the members, the president and other members of the executive of the Denry Youth and Sports Council. They have ensured, Mr. Speaker, that there's a revival of youth and sports activities in Denry, Mr. Speaker. And when we obtained the stands, Mr. Speaker, for the football field, it helped to revolutionize the situation in Denry, Mr. Speaker, such that imagine each club claimed some of the stands and set up the stands themselves. And it is a joy to watch that football during the week and on weekends, that is on Saturdays and Sundays. It is a joy to watch that football, Mr. Speaker, a la Mindu Philip Park, in terms of the friendly rivalry, the noise, and the competition, and the spirit that obtains there, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we also took care of our elderly people by building one particular home for an individual who was in distress, and we also repaired two elderly homes. But you have heard that we have been able to do over the years 17 homes for those people who were in distress because of the need for the repair of their homes, Mr. Speaker. And then we have, Mr. Speaker, projects in train and due for startup. The disaster mitigation project, Mr. Speaker, I do not need to provide any detail on that. We have heard it all before. That is due to start up sometime in June, July. And we're also looking at the hotel, which, Mr. Speaker, I see as the replacement for Belle Fashion, what we call the Poale Bay Resort, Mr. Speaker. And we're also looking at the projects in train. Other projects in train would be the Denry Police Station. The Honourable Member for Miku North, Mr. Speaker, spoke about the Denry Police Station and the Lakai Police Station, both of them in a sad state of repair. Disrepair, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, I am urging the Minister for Home Affairs to look into this urgently, Mr. Speaker, because it's important. If we cannot get those things on the way in terms of repairing, in terms of the new facilities for the Denry Police Station and the Lakai Police Station, I suggest, Mr. Speaker, that we look into the possibility of putting these policemen in another location until such time that those facilities are built, or doing a repair, some repairs to the station. The conditions are not good, Mr. Speaker, and there's an urgent need for us to look at that. Mr. Speaker, other projects in train would be the Erat Daybrush Road Rehabilitation. That is due to start very soon, Mr. Speaker. And of course, we have spoken at length about the Denry the Water Rehabilitation Project for Denry. And I would like to thank the Minister of Finance, the Honorable Prime Minister, the Minister of Communications and Works, and to some extent, WASCO, for the work that has been done, Mr. Speaker. We thank you for that. The people in Denry, Mr. Speaker, are suffering. As we speak, Mr. Speaker, there are a number of people who do not have water, who depend on the truck to haul water or transport water to every house, to each household. And it is something that needs to be looked into, Mr. Speaker, because I do not think, and my people do not think, that this haulage system is working effectively. And therefore, I propose, Mr. Speaker, to meet with WASCO for us to discuss a better system of distribution of water using the trucks. It is always a problem, Mr. Speaker, and it is something which is causing me much discomfort and agony in the constituency. Something has to be done, Mr. Speaker. But people say that joy comes in the morning. And I know, Mr. Speaker, that I know that joy comes in the morning, and I know that the water will be done, and I know it will start very soon, Mr. Speaker, as the contract has already been awarded. We are also looking, Mr. Speaker, at the relocation of the waterfront homeowners. You know, there were 7 homes and several others, Mr. Speaker, 7 homes completely destroyed by Hurricane Ivan, and several others partially destroyed. I'm reliably informed that the Ministry of Physical Development, Environment and Housing is looking at the relocation of the waterfront homeowners, Mr. Speaker. Right now, there has been a rationalization of the Anscombe area for accommodation of residents whose homes were completely destroyed by Hurricane Ivan, Mr. Speaker. So that is being looked at. And there is also the consideration of relocation packages. And Mr. Speaker, there are some who are really suffering. There's an old lady, for example, whom I visited on Sunday, who is in this broken home, Mr. Speaker. And I suspect that we will have to do something about that even before this relocation takes place, because she cannot continue to live under those conditions. And she's a senior citizen who cannot do much for herself. And therefore, I'm going to take the initiative to do something on this, Speaker. The Denry Development Foundation, Mr. Speaker, has prepared a proposal for a computer lab project in Denry, which will look at, Mr. Speaker, computers for the Denry Primary School, but also the use of those computers in the evenings for our people, for our young people and others in the Denry community. We have approached the Japanese through the Japanese grassroots project. That is on the way, Mr. Speaker, and we expect a favorable response from the Japanese on this, Mr. Speaker. We are looking very, very closely at the Denry Recreational Children's Park, Mr. Speaker. That is underway. The survey has been conducted of the area, Mr. Speaker, and we are looking at the site preparation and all of the other things that need to be done in terms of the various swings and park benches and so on that need to be put in that area for the comfort of our families and the children in the Denry area, Mr. Speaker. And we are also looking at the Denry football field lighting project. Mr. Speaker, a project proposal has been prepared to the tune of $300,000, over $300,000, Mr. Speaker, and it is my intention to try to find the requisite sums by contacting certain persons and certain institutions to be able to get this done, Mr. Speaker. It would be a joy to see football played in the area at night, especially for our young people who are working and who do not have the opportunity to come and do some training and participate owing to the times. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, we look forward to that project. And when these things are done, Mr. Speaker, we have on the cards the renaming of the entire area as the Remy J. Lesmore Recreational and Educational Complex. And this is being looked into, Mr. Speaker. But we have some priority needs in the constituency, Mr. Speaker. The Rocky Lane Green Mountain area. Simuna Lakababia tous les jours, Mr. Speaker. L'année chaille la poussière. Un petit travail été fait là. L'année chaille la poussière. Et c'est mon carré où l'eau a tout ça, Mr. Speaker. Et ça, c'est un bagage nous n'y pouvons faire à tout ça. L'année monde qui a souffert avec asthme, l'année monde qui perd tisseptio, l'autre bagaille, un caillou, puis si on dit la poussière qui a détruit toutes ces bagailles ça. Donc nous n'y pouvons garder ces bagailles ça. The hospital road, Mr. Speaker, we need to look at the Victoria Street and Newfield roads in a deplorable condition, Mr. Speaker, right in the heart of the village. This cannot continue. And we have, and the Minister of Communications and Works is aware of this, Mr. Speaker, and I'm confident that he will give us some relief in this financial year, Mr. Speaker. We have the Lakai Ring Road that we must look at, the White Rock Gardens Road, Bois Joli, Glavier, the Basil Erad extension has to be looked at, Mr. Speaker, and the Lapwet Road. All of these roads, Mr. Speaker, are in deplorable condition in the constituency, and it is my intention to look into them, and I'm sure my good friend, the Minister of Communications and Works, will help me to look at some relief for some of these roads. And we have to look at drainage at Lapwet as well, Mr. Speaker, and Limer, and the continuation of the Victoria Street drainage rehabilitation. And Mr. Speaker, if I have to go on bended knees to beg for this, I will do it, Mr. Speaker. I am begging the Honorable Minister for Communications and Works, the Honorable Member for Babono, my very good friend, for the Limer Bridge. It's 2 to 3 years since the bridge has been condemned by the chief engineer of the Ministry of Communications and Works. Mr. Speaker, sou el a maladi pou a moun an ida la. Yo ni pou fè whole war, bon l'appel, entre la ou chous, ek ale a sou highway a pou ive l'hôpital d'Henry, ebe pou ive l'hôpital Victoria, ebe Sendrou. Si, si pou sa a vie bati, Mr. Speaker, si pou a vie bati, Mr. Speaker, yo kanik, se pi chime li me a la, ek ale kote yo ni pou ale. Si tout me t'explique à ça, si la mère dit fait en place ça, Trump dit fait à, Trump là qui suppose, Ken dit fait à, pas qu'à ça entre la piste pour en bas, oui, M. Speaker. Bon, ça fait un bagage, bon, bah, et pour en bas, oui.
540,000 gouttes, milliards.
Oui, moi, oui, là, mais moi, je veux pour en.
Honorable members, the standing orders, although amended, allows you to speak Creole when you offer occasional explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes. I just wanted to make sure that I embellish the point a little bit, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, I can't read that.
Okay. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm looking forward to that. That is absolutely important for us, Mr. Speaker. Absolutely important. And then we want to look at the rehabilitation of the Denry Cricket Field, Mr. Speaker. World Cup 2007 is coming. The Denry Cricket Field, Mr. Speaker, can be looked at. It's one of the best fields, Mr. Speaker. If it can be rehabilitated, it will be one of the best fields on the East Coast, Mr. Speaker. And our cricketers, our young cricketers and our other elderly sportsmen are looking forward to the rehabilitation of that cricket field, Mr. Speaker. Then we produce a lot of great cricketers. And we need Annie Buffer. You forgot Hubert Annie Buffer? You have forgotten him? And I have others. No, there are others I can speak of. There are many, many, many others I can speak of, Mr. Speaker. But I need to get this Denry cricket field rehabilitated, Mr. Speaker. Yeah? And then, Mr. Speaker, we are looking at the total rehabilitation of the Clendon Mason Memorial Secondary School. And I'm reliably informed, Mr. Speaker, that the Ministry of Education is looking at an additional 6 classrooms for the Clendon Mason Memorial Secondary School, total rehabilitation of the toilets, looking at the staff room, and also total refurbishment, Mr. Speaker. I'm unhappy that this is going to happen this financial year, Mr. Speaker. I am really happy about that, Mr. Speaker. And then, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Education must also turn its attention to the relocation of the Denry Infant School. We need to, Mr. Speaker, explore a new site for that, because that Denry Infant School, Mr. Speaker, is a disaster waiting to happen. We need to move out from there, Mr. Speaker. We need to give our infant school children more comfort and better facilities, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, we need to explore a site for the Lakai Lime playing field. And finally, Mr. Speaker, I have to rush a bit because time is against me. We are looking at the total rehabilitation of the Daito fish pot area, as well as the revamping of the management of that facility, Mr. Speaker. That facility is being visited by tourists on a daily basis, Mr. Speaker. It does not look good, it's not being properly managed, and we need to do something. I've had 5 different meetings with the various stakeholders, and we have finally come up with a plan, Mr. Speaker, and I'm hoping within this financial year we can make this facility look a lot better and have it to be better managed, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity today, and I want to state my absolute confidence in this budget, my absolute confidence in the Minister and Ministry of Finance. And I want to state, Mr. Speaker, that when we look across this country and we see all of these things happening and all of these things promised within the budget, Mr. Speaker, I think the time has come for people to understand that this government has worked and is working, Mr. Speaker. As I walk across the country and drive across the country, Mr. Speaker, I see faces of hope. Faces of hope from those, Mr. Speaker, who have been employed at the Sandals Grand that people have so much to say about, the 700 persons. faces of hope, Mr. Speaker, from the elderly whose homes have been repaired. Faces of hope, Mr. Speaker, for all those children who have received bursaries and who can get a secondary school education, Mr. Speaker. I see faces of hope, Mr. Speaker, from those people who have experienced the construction of footpaths where they no longer have to wear two sets of shoes or two pairs of shoes. Yes, Mr. Speaker, all these are faces of hope. I see faces of hope, Mr. Speaker, for those who have received who have received from this government free electrification, Mr. Speaker, where they no longer have to pay $3,000 or $6,000 or $12,000 for poles to receive electricity. Those are my faces of hope. Mr. Speaker, as I continue to go across the country, I see faces of hope from those, Mr. Speaker, who no longer have to pay to use the health centers, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, this government in 8 years has helped to deal with a situation where there was once depression and despondency transformed, Mr. Speaker, to faces of hope. I thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank honorable.